Right now it is time to get out of the rain and talk about food. It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast it on the weekend and also after our 12 noon news during the week. Good morning, Arthur. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm fine. I had a good excuse to stay in all day yesterday, so that was very fine.
I did the same thing looking out my window.
Yeah, you know, it was very pretty here, I have to say, and it reminded me of August in Cornwall, you know, a lot of we had no wind. I don't know where this storm was, you know, blowing, but it wasn't around here, but we did get constant straight down, very pretty rain. So but before that, I decided to broil something. I'm still playing with my new oven. I bought if everybody wants to know, a Thermador 30-inch stove, which doesn't do everything that the larger Thermadors do. Gotta say, it looks really handsome in my kitchen. And it works. It works well. But only the other day did I decide... let me start by saying, no stove really these days has a good inside broiler, at least not one that you can count on to, like, grill a steak. I've used my broiler to you know, brown something on top, but I haven't yet used it until the other day to actually cook something. But I had these, I'd made these sort of Moroccan-ish kefta kebabs, meaning ground meat kebabs on a skewer, and I thought, oh, you know, let me try the broiler. I mean, these only take, at the most, 10 minutes on top of the stove in a cast iron skillet. And I thought, let me try the broiler, you know. Haven't done that yet. And I was shocked to find that it was a good broiler. Now, the last time I had a good broiler was when I had a stove that I like to call Donna Reed. It was a 50s-ish Amana stove, they don't even make them anymore, that did in fact have a good broiler inside. And when the broiler died, that was one of the several things that happened that made me redo my kitchen and got a new stove. And I got a KitchenAid, which had an absolutely awful broiler. It was a useless broiler. And didn't have a bad range top. But that was starting to go, too. My appliance man said, oh, you can't expect more than 10 years out of an appliance these days. So I'd gotten almost 12. I guess I got my money's worth. So now I have this Thermador, which actually has a good broiler. So I'm going to make today a broiled chicken. I haven't done this in 20 years. I used to make this all the time, and in fact, I didn't look, but I think this recipe is in, a la Julia Child, is in my first cookbook, Cooking in a Small Kitchen. You butterfly a chicken. You broil it. Salt and pepper, of course. You broil it on both sides. And I only am making this, besides the broiler, is because I did find a 2.7-pound chicken in my supermarket the other day, a new brand, that to me anyway, new, called Springer. And I've liked these chickens, and they do have small whole ones sometimes. And so I got one, and that's the perfect size. If you're old enough, you'll remember the days when we called these chickens broiler fryers. I haven't seen that in many, many years. But they were the right size for broiling and frying. Nowadays, almost every chicken is over 3 pounds, sometimes closer to 4 pounds, too big for broiling. Anyway, so you broil the chicken. I would say this is probably going to take 5 inches from the heat source. I would say it's going to take about 15 minutes on each side. And then you take it out of and I'm going to do this on the stove-equipped broiler pan. And then I'm going to take it out of the oven and draw off some of the fat that has rendered. And if I only need a couple tablespoons of fat, but I don't have that much fat, I'll have to add a little bit of butter. And you coat the skin side of the chicken thickly with Dijon mustard, and then you pat on breadcrumbs, and then you drizzle it with either the chicken fat and or butter, and you put it back under the broiler to form a crust. It used to be really delicious. I haven't eaten this in so many years. I am really curious to see if it comes out so good. Anyway, the other thing is red peppers are in season. I used to look forward to mid-August into late September, even October, for red sweet peppers. But truth be told, I'm able to now buy pretty good, if not the absolute best, and sometimes incredibly sweet, red peppers from Mexico, even in January and February. But do look up from ones that come from Mexico, because the ones that come from Holland don't taste like anything. If they taste like anything, they're bitter. But the ones that are grown locally and are starting to be harvested now are very sweet. And that's what you want from a red pepper, sweetness, at least in my life, because I only get my sweetness from fruits and vegetables. And by the way, technically, red peppers, which by the way are mature green peppers, it's the same pepper. You leave it on the vine, well, you leave it on the stalk long enough, and the green pepper turns red. And yellow peppers and orange peppers and purple peppers, all those sweet peppers of the different colors, sometimes I buy one of another color or two different colors just for pretty. But in my experience, the red ones are the ones that are the sweetest. Green ones are not sweet, as we all know, because green peppers were the only peppers you could buy in America for the longest time. Now you can get red in the supermarket. But sometimes they're crazy expensive. And by the way, if they are crazy expensive, you know they're out of season, and you know they're probably not going to taste that good. In fact, they could be bad. But I was able to score some red peppers this week at my butcher, who, by the way, there were two brothers who owned this butcher shop, two guys from Calabria. And they're both butchers, but one of them is a great cook. And it's only his prepared foods are the only prepared foods I ever buy. He makes sensational eggplant parmesan. He makes excellent meatballs. Of course, he's a butcher. He makes excellent eggplant rollatini, and many things that I don't buy that I'm sure are excellent, too. But, you know, I don't buy breaded veal cutlets from the butcher. I would buy cutlets and bread them myself so they're hot out of the pan. In any case, he always has great vegetables for sale in the store, things that he uses, of course, in his cooking, including red peppers. So he's particular, you know, about the produce he uses. And I guess, you know, it's hard to be a full-time butcher these days. Most people buy their meat in the supermarket. And, of course, his prices are higher than a supermarket. But they're not nearly as high, by the way, as Whole Foods or other fancy supermarkets or groceries. But anyway, he sells a lot of Italian groceries, meaning pasta, oil, vinegar, things in jars, roasted artichoke, very good, I got to say. And he also, of course, sells all kinds of sliced cold cuts and cheese. So that it's really almost a one-stop shopping place, my butcher. So back to the peppers. He had these peppers that looked, so, I know they're always good, and they were so cheap, they were under $2 a pound. I know I got five peppers for only $5 and change, $6. I used two of them yesterday to make my version of cianfrocca. Cianfrocca is the southern Italian version of ratatouille. And I had eggplant, red pepper, zucchini, onion, and a small can of tomatoes. Actually, good Italian, Mutti, a good brand of Italian crushed tomatoes. I rarely buy crushed tomatoes, but Mutti, I saw them in the store, and I know they're good. So I that was it. And then today, I'm going to roast off the other peppers, because I have a zillion million recipes for peppers. And I guess my basic is I either roast them, saute them, or stew them. Now, I used to stuff peppers, but I'm not eating, but they're basically stuffed with bread, you know. And I like those. I love those kinds of stuffed peppers. In Salerno, there's a particular kind, there's a particular red pepper recipe. I have it, I'm pretty sure it's in Naples at Table, with breadcrumbs, with fresh breadcrumbs. And it contains, as do most of these stuffed pepper recipes, it contains all the flavors of the neighborhood. Gaeta olives, salted capers, could put in a little anchovy. This is all in like a bread stuffing like you would have at Thanksgiving as an American. And you stuff that into a pepper, and you can braise them or roast them, or actually, when I say braise them, you put them in a pan with some tomato and cook it until it's really tender. You could even take your roasted peppers and stuff them with this. And then there's another kind of roasted pepper, stuffed pepper, where you use croutons. And you toss the croutons, meaning cubes of stale bread, with the same ingredients. Gaeta olives pitted, some anchovy, capers, parsley, maybe oregano, and oil, lots of oil. And you toss it all together. You put it in an already roasted pepper in an oiled pan, and you cook it until the croutons on the surface are all crunchy. Just saying that made me hungry for these. Now, but today I'm going to roast my peppers, and what I usually do is 450 degrees, right directly on the rack of the oven. Preheat the oven well. Put the peppers directly on the rack. It's good to put a baking sheet or something on the rack below them. Put them towards the top of the oven because that's the hottest part of the oven. And it gets radiant. They get radiant heat, in fact, from the top of the oven. So put a sheet, a pan underneath just in case one of them bursts or even you're handling them, they leak a little, and this way at least it won't leak out all onto your oven where it will eventually burn. At least it'll be on a pan and you can wash the pan. But actually, mine don't usually leak, but that's a precaution. So you put them on the rack, and I think in my last Italian book it said to roast them for 15 minutes, but I'm finding that 20 is more like it, even a little longer, depending on the peppers. You have to know your peppers. So the lately mine have been taking about 21, 22 minutes. And how do I know they're done? They look charred. They'll have charred spots on them. Halfway through, about 10 minutes into the process, you can turn the peppers. But truthfully, not necessary. Be sure they have some char on them. Take a look and see if the skin is pulling away a little bit from the flesh, which it should be after 20 minutes or so. And then put the peppers. And I use I don't use paper bags anymore. They're all full of, I don't know what kind of chemicals. I don't know, somehow a plastic bag doesn't appeal to me. What I do is I put them in a big pot, cover the pot, and when they're cooled to room temperature, you will find them to be super easy to peel. If they're not easy to peel, that means you didn't leave them in long enough, or they're just really stubborn peppers. But after 20, 25 minutes in a 450 oven, they'll be easy to peel. And you can easily also pull them apart. The seeds will and take the stem out. The only cleaning thing, besides scraping off the seeds and the skin, is you do want to remove the ribs, that fleshy part that's inside the pepper, because that can be a little bit bitter. It certainly won't be sweet. If they give off a lot of juices, you might want to save them for some reason, but I don't usually these days because I'm making peppers all the time, in fact. So I lay out the peppers either, usually halves. Sometimes they separate into segments, so whatever it is. I lay them out in a flat dish, like a platter, a high-ridged platter. Pretty side up, meaning the red side up, the smooth red side up, they're all red. And then I each layer, as I put down a layer of peppers, if there are multi-layers, I put down, drizzle with oil, with your best olive oil, if you and salt, a little bit of salt, and that could be that. Depends on what you want to do after this. If I'm just eating them the way they are, which we do, as a vegetable, roasted pepper is fabulous, dressed with olive oil and chopped fresh garlic. Yes, we eat the garlic raw. You can put a pinch of parsley. You can put a little parsley on for color. Basil's always good. I always have great oregano in the house, so sometimes I just fall back on a couple pinches of oregano. And you could actually keep these in the refrigerator, especially if they're just dressed with olive oil, and you could put the rest on when you eat them. They'll stay for several days, if not 5 days, in the refrigerator with oil on them and a little bit of salt. And then you do what you want to do with them. Now, you could sauté them even further. It's much quicker, and I must say, in the end, sweeter than starting out with raw peppers. But, you know, like sausage and peppers is one of my favorite things in life. In that case, I do make sautéed peppers and onions together. And I've learned over the zillions of years that I've been cooking this that it's best to put the peppers in the pan first. Oil, get it heated so that when you... I don't always heat oil before adding vegetables, but in this case, I do heat the oil until the peppers, you know, make a little noise when they get in there. Cut the peppers into strips, quarter inch, half inch, depends on your mood. De-seeded and cutting out the ribs. Sauté them for about 3, 4, 5 minutes at the most, and then add your sliced onion, because the onion cooks faster than the peppers. And unless, as in sometimes I do, I want the onions to get, like, really browned, not just sautéed, but caramelized. In that case, I would add the onions first, and then I would add the peppers. The peppers take a good 15 minutes to tenderize, and that's all you need in that salt and pepper, salt and freshly ground black pepper, on your sautéed peppers and onions. And by the way, I often make a frittata with this mixture if we're not eating sausage. That on a roll is what they serve at all these Italian festivals, which is probably how I got a taste for it when I was a kid. I guess all over the place. By the way, just as a sidebar here, my first trip to Calabria many years ago, up into the mountains, every few kilometers on the country roads up there, there's a sausage and pepper stand. And I realize that's where that tradition is from. As I found out sometime in the 90s, that the accent that I always heard spoken in Brooklyn wasn't Neapolitan, but Calabrian. There are a lot of Calabrese in Brooklyn, and my butchers are Calabrese. So up in Calabria, they make a lot of sausage, served with onions, and there are these little kiosks on the road that do it. I love it.
It's funny.
No bread these days, but I can eat that happily.
It's funny.
And then I say it makes a great frittata.
It's funny what
Marshall.
It's funny what you say that, because as a kid, we used to visit our relatives down on the Jersey Shore all the time, and my introduction to peppers and onion was on the boardwalk. I as a kid, I would lead the way down the boardwalk, and I'd follow the smell till I came to a sausage and pepper place, and you could get sausage and peppers grinders. You could have them just sausage and peppers, or you could have them with sausages and onions, and sometimes they'd even have some homemade sauce that you could put on them. That's where I developed my love for sausage and peppers.
Well, it's the same thing. It was, it's a truck food, early day truck food. I never had it with sauce, come to think of it. Here's one for you, Marshall. When I first moved up to Litchfield County and started going to church fairs and rummage sales, I discovered that the food at all these Congo churches was fried pizza.
Yeah.
Which, do you remember?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if the churches still do this, But, I mean, I always thought, why in New England are they serving a Neapolitan specialty of fried dough with sauce and cheese on top? You can buy that on the street in Naples. And in the old days, you could buy it freshly fried right out of the fryer, and then they would dress it. These days, I would not buy one of those fried pizzas that is sitting in a glass case outside some pizzeria or cafe because it's been sitting there. Only because it's been sitting there. It might have been good once.
That's why they don't do that anymore. But around here, you could get pizza, but also if you didn't want that, they would fry the dough and then they would cover it with powdered sugar.
With powdered sugar, right. Well, that's another Neapolitan thing.
Oh,
yeah, you know, I love it myself. And by the way, I love fried pizza.
Yeah.
By the way, fried pizza is a thing. And, in fact, we have a pizzeria from Naples in New York. I'm not sure they're open these days. That specializes in fried pizza. Yeah, it's a thing in there. I mean, you know why? Because I would say today, of course, people have modern kitchens with gas stoves, with electric stoves, whatever, even in the center city of Naples. But we're talking early 20th century, nobody had, before the war, nobody had a stove like that. Everybody had something to cook on top of the stove, but they didn't have an oven. That's why, of course, Neapolitans, even today, the big thing is you eat your big meal at midday and then you go out for pizza at night. So so nobody really had a proper oven to make baked, you know, things. And they had bakeries next door, so who needed that? But you always had the top of the stove, and you could always fry. And also, some people didn't even have kitchens, so they would eat food off the street. In fact, hello, Larry. Larry Leventhal, who is a devoted listener of ours, who lives in Bangkok, is visiting New York, and I had lunch with him last week. And he was telling me, well, in Thailand, nobody has a kitchen. I mean, I shouldn't say nobody, but most people don't have real kitchens. They certainly don't have ovens. And that's why they have such great street food in Bangkok. And I got to say, they do have great... You can eat anything you want on the street in Bangkok. The only problem I have with Bangkok is that it's 100 degrees and 100% humidity every day. So when it becomes 75 degrees, which was never, I'll go back to Bangkok. So anyway, back to red peppers, however. So we did baked 450 degrees about 20 minutes. I mean, I should say roasted. If you have outdoor cooking ability, cook them outdoor on coals. It's even better. You got to stand over them and turn them, but it's even better. I have these little grid things I can put on top of the stove, and I do that, but it's too hot right now to be standing over the stove for half an hour, really, over a flame. And then there's sautéed. We talked about that. But we didn't talk about braised. Now, this is one of my main ways of making red peppers, which is a dish called peperonata. Means ata at the end of these things usually means a mess of. So it's a mess of peppers. I also make fagiolata, which is a mess of beans. And I don't want to go into the atas. But peperonata is peppers, onions, cooked in tomatoes. So, like with the sautéed peppers, I start with the peppers. I sauté them for a few minutes in olive oil. And then I add the onions. And I would say I would make less than three peppers because this is another thing that holds for days. So why not make enough to eat for a couple days? So let's say for three red peppers, you want one medium large-ish, let's say 8-ounce even onion sliced. Throw the onion in with the oil, salt, nice amount of salt, even, you know, good rounded half teaspoon of salt at this point. Toss them around for about not even 10 minutes. And then you can add 14 ounces or a small can or a half of a large can of plum tomatoes crushed. So if you're using your good plum tomatoes in the 28-ounce can. Just haul out half the can, eyeball it, and as you each tomato, just crush it right into the pot. Let it simmer a couple of minutes. Maybe you want to taste for salt here. You can add some freshly ground pepper. Cover the pot and let it simmer. Usually it doesn't take more than 15, 20, 25 minutes at the most. Again, it depends on the peppers, the onions, how cooked you want them. I like mine pretty well cooked, meaning really quite tender. If after 15 minutes or so you see that there's just too much liquid in the pot, then keep the cover off until the saucy part reduces a bit. At the end, and I, by the way, I put in my herbs almost always at the end. In the end here, I would add a lot of basil. And if you don't have a lot of basil, a lot of parsley. And if you don't have a lot of basil or a lot of parsley, a couple of pinches of oregano. But really, you want a fresh herb here, either basil or parsley. And when I say a lot, I mean, a handful, shredded with your knife, or torn, or it's always good to tear basil. I like doing that, too. And let that cook literally only, 3-4 minutes at the most. You don't have to let it cook very long at all. In fact, just the heat of the pepper annatta will wilt and cook the basil. So if you want to, you can just add the basil at the end, take it off the heat, and as it cools down, the basil will give off some flavor. I like basil in big pieces because I think you taste it better. So don't mince fine the basil or put it in your food processor. The same with parsley. In fact, I learned cooking with my friends in Naples, parsley is a flavor. It's not just a garnish. And I find it missing sometimes when I don't have fresh parsley, and I use oregano, for instance, or thyme, something different. I really miss the freshness of the parsley. And so yesterday when I made my champotta, which, by the way, some people will tell you it means something really dirty, but it doesn't. Americans have really turned that upside down. So, Italian-Americans. But anyway, I added literally a handful of parsley to my champotta yesterday, a real big handful. And all I did with the parsley was cut it into thin, thin, thin slivers, meaning I gathered it under my hand and with my chef's knife cut it as finely as possible, finely cut. And that was it, not chopped. This way you get to taste the parsley.
All right.
Always fix up the salt and pepper at the end, too.
Sounds
even
good.
After it's cooled. I can eat any of these at room temperature.
Yeah, I love peppers.
Yeah, well, now is the time. All right, well, I have three peppers to stick in the oven. The question is, at what point of the day do I want the kitchen to get hot enough? Not hot enough, but too hot. I think maybe now.
Yeah, I think now's a good time.
Now's a good time. Get it over with. It's only 72 degrees here, so it's not hot.
Yeah, and it's going to be more humid later on today, so yeah, now's a good time.
Well, no, it can't get more humid. It's already raining.
Okay.
And a humidity gauge. It was 90-something when I woke up this morning.
All right.
Inside my apartment.
Well, still do it now. It's a better time to do it.
It is. I'm a big morning cook because later in the day I get too tired. Bob gets upset. Why are we so tired? I said, we're old.
That's what my doctor
and
my
I've
doctor,
been busy.
My doctor just said that.
And I don't know about you, but I've been busy all morning, so we can eat today.
That's exactly right. All right, Arthur, I will speak to you next week.
Take care, everyone.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robinhood Radio. You can find Arthur, of course, live on the air on Monday mornings or at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. And on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.